Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive, and break down a season of television each and every episode. I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Damask Leary.
And today we'll be discussing Russian Doll Season 2. Damask, it feels like forever since we did one of these, and it has been about 4 weeks or five weeks, I think, since we did a review episode.
Four weeks or 7 years, who can tell?
What's been happening to you?
You know, I had the COVID. That was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. You know, just kind of doing that, spending time at home. I watched Season 2, 3, and 4 of Star Trek Discovery. That's how I spent my time. And I built a massive, gorgeous, gorgeous castle in my brother's Minecraft realm. So I did that. Very cool. You know, just being super productive. You know me.
Very cool. Have you been watching or have you watched any of Strange New Worlds yet, the new Star Trek show that's like Captain Pike and...
No, because I was really struggling in Season 2 of Discovery because it was awful. And then it just wasn't giving me, you know, any kind of Star Trek vibes, and you recommended New Worlds and I was like, that seems more my jam. Though as Discovery goes on, it does get there. So that so that's why I didn't go on to Strange New Worlds from there.
I've watched the first 3 episodes now of Strange New Worlds, and I kind of like it. Yeah.
Cool.
It's not trying to do some big, like, mystery or anything like that. Yeah. It's got, like, one kind of storyline thread that's propelling particularly Captain Pike's sort of storyline a little bit, which is also a little bit meta, which I kind of like about it too. But then, like, every episode so far has just been, like, here's today's adventure of the week. Here's today's adventure of the week. And... you know, based around a little bit of moral and scientific quandary. It's been pretty cool. Very Star Trek. I like that.
And in Discovery, like, you do obviously spend quite a bit of time with Pike and Number 2, and they're both great. So, yeah, I'm sure I will enjoy it by the time I get around to it.
For those wondering why my voice sounds like this, it's a homage to Natasha Lyonne, since we're doing Russian Doll Season 2. I may as well get into the voice. Last night, I was at the football, but then... our fucking government got overturned finally, and we've got a more progressive government in Australia as of last night. And I was celebrating pretty hard because of that.
Yes. And amen to that.
That's part of what's going on here. So let's take that excellent energy and get to our spoiler-free review of Russian Doll Season 2.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
We return to New York City 4 years after the events of Russian Doll Season 1 to find Nadia, who is quickly approaching her 40th birthday, getting caught up in some brand new timey-wimey hijinks. The core creative trio of Natasha Lyonne, Leslie Headland, and Amy Poehler all return, as do most of the major cast of Season 1, alongside newcomers Annie Murphy, Sholto Copley, Irene Bardan, Ilona McCrae, Athena Papadimitriou, Francisca Farkas, Ephraim Sykes, and would you believe, Rosie O'Donnell. Aside from still playing the now iconic Nadia, Lyonne also directed 3 episodes this season, up from just 1 in the previous season, sharing the director's chair with Alex Buono. Season 2 of Russian Doll consists of 7 episodes, each coming in at around 30 minutes, and took us approximately 3 hours and 25 minutes to watch. At the time of this recording, it has not been confirmed if Russian Doll will return for a 3rd season. So, Damask, please remind our listeners what your thoughts were or feelings were on Russian Doll Season 1 when we reviewed that about 3 years ago.
It was quite a while ago. I loved it. I was obsessed. It kind of came out of the blue. It was unexpected, to say the least, in terms of not only just it arriving, but also the story that it was telling. It was complex. It was interesting. Natasha Lyonne was at her absolute best in terms of her charm, charisma, humor, all of that stuff. Everything seemed to come together to create a really strong show that I certainly very much responded to.
Absolutely. I think we were both really, really head over heels for season one in a lot of ways. Yeah. I came in with the controversial, I think it's a 4 out of 5. Maybe if I watch it again, it'll be a 5. And by the end of our discussion, I was like, shit, I should have given this a 5. I'm actually giving this a 5 now. Really, really, really loved season one. And yeah, the comedy stylings, definitely. I think the premise, while not necessarily unique, was handled in such a fun and different way. Mm. The overall storyline and metaphor and sort of the themes of the show were so well executed upon. It was hard not to be completely enchanted by Russian Doll season one. And it was interesting heading into season two. We wondered sort of what that would look like. There was lots of discussions about, would it be a direct continuation? Would it still be around Nadia? Would it be maybe a different cast or centered on a different main character with Nadia as supporting, an anthology type thing? We weren't really sure. So it was always curious to see what season two would be. So with that in mind, Damask, would you like to give us your spoiler-free review of Russian Doll season two?
Sure, why not? All right, so firstly, it's important to note that after the first season of Russian Doll, which is approximately 17 million years ago, it was also around the time of my 30th birthday, and that birthday was TV themed because of course it was. Mm. And Russian Doll was at the forefront of almost everyone's mind. I had at least 2 Nadias at the party.
I think there was 3 from memory. There might have even been 3. I reckon there was 3.
Yeah. If I could have, I even thought about how I could recreate the bathroom vortex in my own bathroom. So it was very much a part of that party. And yet this year, with this season, I don't think I've really spoken to a single person about season two. And it's not because it was necessarily bad, but I think its impact is certainly less. You know, this season is all about time, and there is an inherent helplessness when you have to succumb to time. Nadia seems determined to change her fate this season. But, you know, the TV film world has told me that you can't really change your fate unless, of course, you're the Avengers. But no spoilers there, I suppose, for a film that's at least 5 years old. With perceived endless possibilities, Nadia must face that certain familial inheritance can't be avoided, and sometimes that's hard to watch. She wants to change a lot of things, but, you know, us as viewers know that perhaps most likely probably can't. And I think because of that, this season is somehow less interesting than the first. Could they have done something strange and new with time? Of course they could have. Those possibilities should be, and I think can be, endless, but I don't think they are this time around. Alan's character, who was a really wonderful addition to season one, seems much, much, much less important this season. I kept waiting for it all to tie together for a twist that would bring satisfaction, but honestly, it didn't come. He's got his own thing going on, but my goodness, it doesn't really seem anywhere near as important as the main storyline of Nadia. And I don't think that's because of the show failing to achieve what it wanted. I think it was kind of the point. I think they were doing what they wanted, but I also think they perhaps forgot, I don't know, the audience in terms of the story creation.
Do you think they felt inclined to include Alan in the series and maybe it was an afterthought, or the core idea didn't leave enough room, but they felt they had to include it? Maybe they were even told they had to include it from higher ups, even if it didn't necessarily enhance or contribute to the season that much.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's impossible to know. I think there's probably a great love for the actor in terms of the people who are making the show and want to include him because he is wonderful. But that means you then need to spend a huge amount of time making sure that the story you give him feels legitimate to the audience watching and not feeling as though it's an add-on. And unfortunately, it felt like an add-on. And I don't know the parameters around why it feels that way, but that's just simply the end product, unfortunately. So last season, the characters were brought to life through an absurd plot. This season, the characters seem weighed down by it. You know, Natasha Lyonne is forever a charming gem, but this season for me personally just isn't as good as the first. I'm hoping that this is the second act and the third season will bring growth and realizations that the second was lacking. You know, this may be the growing pains of season two. It might be simply an important step that isn't as satisfying for the characters to take. So when we get to season three, it's really going to hold a punch. But as it stands at the moment, I can't help but feel disappointed by the second outing of Russian Doll. And that's my review.
Very good. I think I'm in a very similar place to you overall. It's funny thinking about my experience with season one when I listened back to our review of season one and I sort of started watching that show and felt a little bit baffled, a bit disconnected. I had a hard time finding my way into the show. And then about halfway, actually at the point where the character of Alan was introduced, suddenly it's like the show came into focus for me and everything got better from there and it sort of like ramped up. And then on reflection, going back and watching season one again, even the earlier parts or the first half of the season worked for me sort of when I knew where they were getting to. This time around, it was like the opposite experience. Rather than being a bit baffled and then everything coming into focus, I was super into the show from the jump. I was like, this is a great concept. This is a great idea. They're having so much fun with it. And then as the season continued, I became more baffled by like, oh, okay, this isn't quite doing enough with this great idea.
I totally agree with that. That was my sentiment as well.
Yeah, it's a strong new concept and it's a damn hard thing to follow up such a strong first season. We've talked about this before. Sophomore seasons are really, really difficult. The second season can be very make or break. And you wonder sometimes whether a show or a concept is only good for one season. Maybe it shouldn't have a second season. But what was weird is that I thought this concept did have potential. The idea was there, a great follow-up idea to season one. But for some reason, it wasn't coming together as something great. It has some excellent moments, some really fantastic uses of that core conceit. There are highlights in this season I look forward to talking about when we get to spoilers. But it just didn't build to a successful endpoint the same way that season one did. I also found something that was a little bit frustrating was it felt it needed to continue to tie itself back to season one in a couple of ways that felt limiting. Things like referencing lines that became memes after season one. More than once, there were like repeated lines and ideas. And I know this is a timey-wimey show. The idea of things repeating is like built into season one. But it almost kind of felt like they couldn't escape the vortex of season one's popularity. And I kind of wish they were better at being able to just like cut themselves loose from that and do something new without having to feel like they had to repeat what season one was doing to some degree. As you said, I think Nadia's storyline in an overall sense is compelling. It has some great ideas in there. It even gets to a place that I'm like, cool, yeah, that's a complete thought, but maybe wasn't executed as well as I would have liked it to have been. Alan's storyline was a big nothing for me.
Yeah.
It either needed to go much, much, much further with this idea or just not be there at all.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that this season is one episode shorter than the original season. And you're like, should this have been one episode shorter or one episode longer to add more room for Alan? I don't really know what the solution was there, but the Alan stuff just really left me cold. I also wondered, I don't know if you feel this way, and maybe it's me just not remembering season one well enough because it's been a while since I've watched that as well. I kind of felt like this season had a slightly more frantic energy than season one, a little bit more scattered. The edit was kind of blunt at times.
Yeah, I think scattered is the word because I think like the first season certainly is frenetic. Like, yes, it feels out of control and like a whole bunch of stuff is happening all at the same time. You're like, what the fuck's going on?
Yep.
But towards, you know, the middle and end, you're like, oh, okay, purpose, intention, it's all there. I feel safe as a viewer.
Yes.
This one doesn't feel that way. It's like there's a whole bunch of ideas here and thoughts here. It doesn't feel thought through, though.
Yeah.
That purpose is missing, which I think, yeah, is a huge detriment to the plot.
Is this a bad season of television? No, I don't think it is at all. But it doesn't come together nearly as well as season one. And as much as I'm sort of hoping for a season three, so it can end on a better note, at the same time, I kind of also wish it maybe just stayed as a single season. This should be, and I hate people who say this, like, this ruined Russian Doll by doing a second season. It doesn't ruin the first season whatsoever. No. But it does make you worry. It's like, yeah, this, they should have never gone for a season two or season three. Maybe should have stayed a season one. It was such a perfect gem that it only had one season in it. But if season three does happen, I'll still be excited, particularly if it's a final season, maybe a third act to round things out. But yeah, at this point, this was a rocky season two.
Yeah, I think that first season had such a wonderful control of its deeper meanings and metaphors. And this season, I feel like it's telling me a confused metaphor. You know when someone gets lost in their own thought? I felt that quite a bit, particularly when we were coming towards the end of the season. I was like, I get, like, I can understand what you're trying to do here.
Yeah.
But it feels confused and messy, whereas the first season felt so tight.
I think in some ways season two, and this will be easy to talk about when we get to spoilers, obviously, season two has a similar trajectory to season one where our characters are sort of on the wrong trajectory for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's not until towards the end they start to figure out what really the solution is, what the lesson is meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
But this time around, I figured out pretty early what the season was probably going to be about, like what the theme was. And then by the time I got there, I was like, boy, it took a long time to get to something that, like, seemed apparent to me really early on. And then getting there didn't seem organically fulfilling for the character of Nadia or for me.
Yeah, well, that seems like when we get there, I don't think the getting there is well told in terms of the feeling of the audience. I was like, I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But when we're there, I don't feel any kind of catharsis or satisfaction or I felt unfulfilled and honestly really sad, and I don't think it's – maybe it is.
It could be on purpose. But
it could be on purpose.
But you got to be careful when you're doing that.
Yeah. It didn't seem – that on purpose didn't seem on camera. It was just like, this is just how I'm walking away feeling after watching it. But – oh, I really needed a moment here.
Yes.
Really needed a moment from Nadia.
Yep.
Of acknowledgement, of even a speck of understanding of what had just transpired. And I didn't get that. And so I felt a little bit empty and dissatisfied.
I can't wait to talk to about this in spoilers now, because I feel like the exact same way.
Yeah.
Very quickly before we give our score, you were talking about how no one's talking about this season. You felt like season one, there was sort of this mini little phenomena that was happening. Everyone was talking about it. People were really excited about season one. This hasn't happened with season two. Do you have any theories on, do you think it's just the quality of the season? I have a theory that people just haven't watched it, that it felt like it sort of came out of nowhere very quickly and was gone just as quickly. And
I mean, that was the case with the first season. It felt like it came out of nowhere.
Yes.
People watched it and were like, oh my God, this is really good. And I think this season came out of nowhere and people watched it, but it wasn't as good. So there's no need to tell your friends, be like, oh my God, you've got to watch season two. Or, oh my God, we've got to chat about season two.
That like telling people to go and watch it or not definitely is missing 100%. It's also not fresh and new this time around because we've had a season one. So even if it was, let's say it was as good or just a smidge below it, I think people are going to have a hard time, you know, people don't want to talk about it because it's not fresh anymore necessarily. I think also, I just think Netflix are just doing a fucking shit job of promoting these things now. Netflix is going through a very turbulent time at the moment.
Oh boy, isn't it just.
And we talked a lot about this on the off-topic hot topic we did with Paul and Liam when you were unwell. But this is the sort of problem. They've got this very unique, I still think good television show, that, But I'm surprised it hasn't been talked about more. I really am. And whether that's the quality of the show or whether that's Netflix advertising or a mixture of both, something went kind of wrong here. And I am I'm convinced it's not getting a season three. With Netflix cutting shows left, right, and center at the moment, and they couldn't even finish Glow, have a season four that they announced they were going to do, yeah. I just think there's a very strong chance we don't get a season three.
Certainly possible.
What are you scoring this out of five?
All right. For no other reason than simply my enjoyment of it, I think I'm going to have to... I don't think it's a bad show at all, but I do think I'm going to have to give it just a simple 3.5.
I am also giving it 3.5. I'm giving it a relatively high-ish 3.5.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's better than some shows I give a 3.5. I could even almost argue it's better than some shows I've given a 4, but when I look at my thing of like 3 stars is decent and 4 stars is excellent, it's not excellent enough of the time. There are some big weaknesses, I think, that mean you can't quite push it there. It's close. It's almost to a 4, but I couldn't in good conscience give it a 4.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, before we dive into spoilers, we'd like to ask everyone who enjoys the show to please review us on Apple Podcasts and or Spotify. Nothing helps the show to grow more than by throwing 5 stars or a glowing review our way.
And when we reach 25 written reviews, we will finally review Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1.
We'd also love you to share Hunting Seasons with anyone in your life that obsessively wants to talk to you about the latest show they've watched. Shove this in their face and it'll make them super happy. That's a money-back guarantee.
Our next episode, which should be a couple of weeks away, we'll be back to review Atlanta Season 3. So if you'd like to contribute to our discussion of Atlanta, or if you have any thoughts on Russian Doll, you can write to us or send us an audio recording that we may include on a future episode. To contact at huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter at huntingscast. But right now, let's talk spoilers for Russian Doll Season 2.
Deep dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
All right, I want to start because we sort of were tiptoeing around it so much in our spoiler-free review.
Yeah.
What it was that like... The overall theme, the where this was all leading, what it built up to, that you felt like it didn't quite achieve getting to that moment or emotionally wasn't quite there for you.
Well, what's her name? Ruthie? Is that the character's name?
It's all about Ruth. Ruth. Yeah.
It was the Ruth of it all. So we've got two forces battling one another, which is coming to terms with your past and feeling it, you know, this incredible desire to change it, alter, rewrite your history, and also appreciating those around you who have supported you, given you love, other wonderful things in your life, and being present and appreciating that. So there are two opposing forces this season. And I think quite early on, you discover that that is exactly what Nadia's lesson is going to be this season is to like, yes, you want to overcome your past, heal the past, rewrite the past, whatever it is. But really, ultimately, she's going to learn to appreciate her present or certainly realize that she should have appreciated the present. All great stuff. Fabulous. We get to that, final episode? Ruth has gone. She's passed away. I didn't find, is there, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I missed it, one moment of catharsis or realization on the point of Nadia that really pulls that all together?
It, I guess the argument is that, like, it's meant to be a pretty tragic scenario that's happened here. That Nadia, in getting so engrossed in, like, her own family history, has sort of missed seeing her kind of surrogate mother's end of her surrogate, has somehow underappreciated or missed the end of her life because she got so wrapped up in herself. And so it's not meant to be cathartic, I guess. It's meant to be sort of this tragic moment.
But even in, like, but even within tragedy as a viewer, there can be catharsis to watch it.
Sure.
I'm not necessarily talking about catharsis on in terms of Nadia's experience, but having her at least acknowledge the gravity of having missed that opportunity.
I guess
to see her really have that moment. And I don't think we got that.
I think it's there. If it's there, because I agree with you in a lot of senses that it doesn't, because you can feel it coming, right? Because you know that's what this is about. Her friends are telling her, you know, she keeps missing phone calls. She's everything, right?
Yeah.
You feel like there needs to be a moment of reckoning that you feel, and it kind of is abstract is the problem. Like they have this thing where they go into this train, they've paid the toll to fucking horse or whatever, and everyone's already on the way to the funeral and stuff, and it's all abstract and obtuse. And then they get hit by the trains, and then they go into the, like, the pit under New York, the void or whatever it is, and it's just, it's not fulfilling, I don't think.
No,
in the same way that season one's ending was so amazing, because not only did what season one, it still seems like a magic trick to me that it ended so well, that getting to the end of season one and, like, coming to terms with her mom and what went down with her as a child, but then when her and Alan are split into different realities and have to save each other from dying that night, it's like there was this extra element of, like, they by finding each other, they were able to help each other and save each other, sort of thing. And then essentially those timelines, I guess, like, re-merged into each other at the end of the season, which is what's happening under that bridge at the end of season one or whatever, right? When they're going through the tunnel or whatever it is. It's got the cool imagery of them landing in that, like, thing of water. It's got, there's an emptiness there, I guess. They're having these conversations, like, Nadia with her mother and Alan with his grandmother, I think. And then, but none of it, yeah, it's missing that something that makes you go, oh, I felt that. I finally felt what that was all about. It doesn't get there.
Yeah, I think for, like, all of its kind of absurdity or abstractness, season one always felt like, okay, me as a human in that situation, you could feel the emotion around it. Whereas I think they get lost in the abstract here. I think they get lost in how they're going to tell the story as opposed to focusing on what are people feeling as they watch it.
Well, let's talk about, we'll start with Nadia's story, obviously. In general, how did you feel about this journey? This, she gets on the 6 train, she's transported back to 1982, I think it is. She is in the body of her own mother, who is pregnant with herself. Like, all, like, straight away, I'm just like, this is fucking wild. This is, like, I love it. It's like if Doctor Who could just be a little more edgier and weird.
Yeah.
Is she going to sleep with what might be her dad, but probably isn't her dad? But, like, what the fuck is happening here? Like, straight away, I was like, this is so cool and weird and still timey-wimey, but very different to what we did in season one.
There's so much there that I was having a lot of fun with.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say that I was watching this and not enjoying myself. Of course I was. It's like Natasha Lyonne, like, in a strange space, interacting in absurd ways with her very silly sense of humor. And the concept itself was very fun. You know, particularly towards the beginning, I was having a lot of fun. I was like, okay, all right, this is, we're back. This is very silly, absurd, all that stuff. Great. I think my expectation, though, was like, okay, that's the premise. That's our intro. Wonderful. I'm really enjoying that. I can't wait to get to know her mum more. I can't wait to have, like, some kind of deeper understanding of her mum, her grandma, all that stuff. I think I have a basic deeper understanding of her grandma. I still have no idea who her mum is, which makes me go, why do we spend so much time doing that if we're not going to get to understand the woman, the motives, and all of that stuff?
First, I'll say no. We'll talk about her mum Nora first. Then I disagree a little bit with that. I think they did do a pretty good job of getting us to understand it. Maybe not Nora, but Nora's illness pretty well. Like, I think by the end of this, Nadia has come to really understand just how troubled her mum was, especially.
But I also think that, you know, understanding someone's illness is not understanding who they are, though. And like, I understand that she was sick, but I have no concept of who Nora was as a person.
Okay. On the sickness side of things first, though, I think they did a really good job with that, particularly episode 3, I think it was, when Nadia starts to experience the sort of schizophrenic illness that her mum was having. Was because I like watching that episode, I very quickly started to feel disorientated and like something doesn't feel right here. And that just progressively got to the point of Nadia realizing that she was experiencing what was going on inside her mum's mind, especially when they got to the asylum. Mm. And there was some incredibly effective cinematography to make you feel all of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
The performance from Natasha Lyonne, the edit, and then the camera work in particular, I was just like, I felt all of that, and I felt that Nadia was feeling it. And then, for at least on that level, I definitely understood that Nadia had a better sense and had come to peace a little bit with who her mother was based on how sick she was, because she got to feel it. It's weird. Mm-hmm. This reminds me of something from the Ricky Gervais podcast. I don't like Ricky Gervais anymore, but back in the day, that was a good show. And Carl Pilkington used to come on that and have these ridiculous thoughts, and they would poo-poo them. But one thing that an idea that he kind of had, Carl Pilkington, was like, wouldn't it be cool if doctors could get inside your body and feel what you feel to understand?
I remember that episode, yeah.
Because,
yeah,
like, the problem you always have, and I say this as someone who works in the medical field as well, is that you are always trying to understand a person based on them trying to describe it. And, like, how you feel, pain, just as an example, is actually very hard to quantify and describe. And like
being particularly able to, if it's your norm, right? Then yes, how do exactly you compare right. it to someone else's norm?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My experience to the same illness might even be different to somebody else. Like it can be very, very different. And so seeing like this is what happens in the show. Nadia gets to be inside her mother and like gets a firsthand experience of like, oh my God, this is what it feels like to be you. Mm. I understand you better now because this is fucked. So that I thought was very, very effective. On the other hand, what you're saying about like Nora the person beyond her illness, I get what you're saying. I guess the only way we really come by it is through Ruth. Ruth does try to explain at least how she understands Nora in relation to her mother and that how that relationship has been tough and how her expectations have been very high and how that relationship between the two of them has been very tortured and probably has informed a lot of where Nora's rebelliousness or pushing herself away from her mum has come from. So there was that element as well, but I don't disagree with you that it could have gone a little bit further potentially.
Did you ever have a moment of wondering why Ruth and Nora were friends?
Yes, 100%.
I was very curious about that. I was like, I'd love some insight there.
And considering how important Ruth ultimately is to the conclusion of this series or the overall arc of this series for Nadia, I'm surprised and the fact that it's fucking Annie Murphy.
Yeah.
How we didn't spend more time with Annie Murphy's Ruth. Why we didn't. There were some cool scenes, don't get me wrong. I think the bit where she like sells her, like there was one sequence where they're sitting down, might have been after Ruth, it's been a little while since I watched the series now, but used like gave her old wedding ring away. Mm-hmm.
And they're at the bar.
Like, at the bar afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. That
was
is
like
after that.
A wonderful scene, I thought, where you got to understand Ruth a lot. But no, you could have gone.
It made me understand why Nora was friends with Ruth. Of course,
totally.
An amazing friend.
Totally.
I have no idea why Ruth is friends with Nora.
Yeah.
I was still left wondering about that.
We need to spend time in Nora's world beyond her just talking about her divorce, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, that's informative. okay, but you don't understand.
Wait, whose divorce?
Ruth's divorce, wasn't it? It was her
wedding
ring.
No, her husband died.
Her husband died. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Still, that relationship that she no longer has with her husband, you still understand why she is friends with Nora, as you sat. What is she getting from that?
Yeah.
That makes
sense. How did
sense?
It begin? Like, what was the... Yeah, I was curious and I thought we'd get there. And then when we didn't, I was like, oh, okay.
Isn't there an opportunity to win... Nadia figures out or starts to understand that she has, you know, by getting so involved in her own past, her family's past, she has ignored and missed the saying goodbye to Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
An opportunity to go back and maybe spend some time with Ruth when she was younger.
Have
and
a
understand
deeper
that.
Understanding.
Be
of
there
Ruth
maybe and- when they first met, you know, back inside in Nora and like, get to understand why they are friends, where they are, and even why Ruth sticks around for so long.
Yeah,
after.
Why Ruth would, even when Nora's gone, takes on that responsibility of looking after Nadia. That, like, that story to me is fascinating, and we don't get any of it.
And that's the frustrating thing, is there is, for what its ideas are big and on paper the concepts work, it felt like there were so many things left on the table and missed opportunities there. I think that's a perfect, perfect example. I did want to say also, when you were talking about how fun it was, like traveling back in time and stuff like that, I thought the traveling back to 1982 New York was really well executed. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean like getting on the 6 train, that was cool. Like, it was extremely well realized and felt very genuine and real and didn't feel like, sometimes these things can feel a little bit like, oh, look, we're in the 80s. Everyone's got crazy hair and like, look at what they're wearing. It just felt like, oh, this feels like a period of New York that has once was and now is no longer is. And it, I know, it felt very legitimate to me. I also loved the sequence where Nadia left a voicemail message on Nora's phone as well. I think it was the end of episode 2. Just ask you not to fuck it up. This is like this is your daughter calling from the future saying please, please, please. I thought that was wonderful, wonderful scene. How did you feel about the stuff with the grandmother? You thought that was a little more successful?
Just in terms of like, I guess insight in terms of like, if so much of the story is going to be about, you know, inherited ways of coping or inherited trauma, all of that kind of stuff. It was informative in terms of, okay, if we're going to talk about the motivation of Nora or perhaps the things that dictate the decisions that she makes, I understand, you know, you're the daughter of one, an immigrant mother, but also a mother who has experienced, you know, fascism and, you know, fleeing for her life. That made a lot of sense to me. So, that part of it for me was good. I also just simply enjoyed Natasha Lyonne, every scene in which she was engaging with that grandma and the dialogue that took place was just, it was just simply enjoyable to watch. Speaking from like, you know, obviously she was Nora, but very much not pretending to be Nora, talking as though she was Nadia. I don't know. It just made me giggle and it was an interesting story and not really where I guessed the show was going to go.
Sure. Hey, did you feel like it could have gone any steps further back? Or do you think like just stopping at the grandmother? I mean, really the grandmother was her oldest known relative, I imagine she had in connection to. So going back further than that might have been a bit redundant or not quite as compelling emotionally. But have you seen Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness yet?
No, no spoilers.
No spoilers.
I booked tickets and then I had COVID, so I had to refund them.
It's funny how sometimes an idea you think you know where it's going to go and it's like, oh, they did great things with it, but it's like, oh, I thought they were going to go further with this sometimes. Like you could, it's Russian Doll, right? It's like you could just keep going and going and going and going a long way back if you wanted to and go really wild with it and they never quite got there. But I agree, that stuff was relatively good. It all really just added up to being able to find out that Nadia couldn't change the past.
Yes.
Which seemed pretty apparent the moment that the Krugerrands went missing on the train. It's like, I think time is trying to tell you can't fuck with the past. So stop trying to fuck with the past.
Yeah, definitely don't take your baby self into the fucking future. Now, oh my God. And turns that was so stressful for me to watch. I'm like, have you not watched a film? Don't do that. Don't do that.
That I love, though, as like an act of rebellion. Like, time won't let me do what I want to do. So, fuck it. I'm going to take my baby self into my present. And
I think
really
generally those kind of timey-wimey stories, the plot would not have allowed her to do that.
Totally, yeah.
But this time, you know, she was allowed to. So, it's like, oh, my God. And then, obviously, time starts falling apart. But, yeah, that was interesting, if not incredibly stressful.
Totally. Okay, let's talk about that. Did you enjoy, like, the last two episodes in particular? She takes baby Nadia into her present, and we go back. She breaks time, and we're back at that party, her 36th birthday party from season one. How do you feel about returning to that again?
Okay, so I wasn't too distracted by that because all I could feel was this kind of compounding stress that she was running out of time to be with Ruth.
Yes, okay,
I felt
that
so very much. And so I think that building of stress was why I did not feel that, from an audience perspective, that catharsis when we get to the end. But I could feel the building of she's running out of time with Ruth. She's so distracted. Mm-hmm. She's so unfocused. She's unable to see what's right in front of her. Did that annoy you to be back at the party?
It excited me in a little bit. It excited me. And there were like parts of it that I even enjoyed, like when they go to the hospital and she goes to the morgue and she sees like all the bodies of herself.
Yeah.
We see one of the, do you remember in season one of those trio of guys that kept showing up?
Yeah.
You see them again when they were the ambulance drivers. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how many times they show up this season, but there was at least one time, one of the cops that came to Nora's apartment to take her to the psych ward.
Mm.
One of those guys was one of the guys from last season, stuff like that. But like, oh, this is like your outside time. You're seeing the mechanism of time that you sort of broke in season one. It was fun, I guess. And like Schrodinger's Ruth was kind of cool too, in terms of like she's both dead and not dead, and like, is there anything Nadia can do about it? But it was like, there was a little bit of me like, they keep leaning on this season one thing. So the example I wanted to give was, there was a moment where Nadia said, time zones, what a concept, which is a riff on the very memed Thursday, what a concept, one of my favorite Twitter profiles to follow. And then when Nadia was born, I can't remember the other woman's name, but her grandmother's friend from Budapest said, sweet birthday, baby.
Yeah.
I was like,
that annoys
you. You know those are like two of the things, like the catchphrases, quote unquote, that made it out of season one that people still think about. I certainly do. And it annoyed me a little bit. They felt like they had to tie themselves so much to that season one. It was a nice surprise to be back in that bathroom. I kind of wish it was more important though than just like, and we're back at the birthday party. How about that? Time's broken. It's like, well, make it mean something more than it did. It didn't. It felt as ultimately as fun as it was, as throwaway as the time zones, what a concept, and sweet birthday baby bits. But anyway.
Yeah. I think like beyond simply signifying that universe, time, all of those concepts are playing with Nadia, and she also is in that sand pit and playing as well, that it is playing with her in terms of like the callback to sweet birthday baby or whatever. But beyond that, it doesn't really have a meaning that justifies its existence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't meta enough. Well, I don't know, but it's like, because they redo the shot of her coming out and saying hi to everyone at the party, like the exact same actors and the exact, I've rewatched that season one couple of first episodes again since watching season two. It's like, great. And?
Yeah.
Apart from her and Alan sort of arguing about what's happening, it was just like, this seems kind of pointless and bit of a crutch. How do you feel about, do you have any different thoughts on horse? Something we came to at the end of season one or you explained to me was like, horse is a metaphor for Nadia's heroin addiction.
Yeah.
We see horse early in this season. He calls her Nadia Nora before she even gets on the 6 train.
Mm-hmm.
And then horse is there towards the end of the season and Nadia and
Alan
pay.
He seems to be some kind of mythological supernatural being that is, I don't know, time, space, movement itself. Like he seems to be within the fabric of existence or like living beyond it in a way that no one else is. So previously in season one, I thought he was a lovely metaphor for, yes, you know, substance abuse, all that kind of stuff. And now he seems to be, I don't know, mythological other than didn't really tie in as well this time around for me.
I was trying to reconcile. It's like, let's try and continue the idea that horse is a metaphor, right? This close personal friend that she gets her in trouble or returns to. Is it possible that she's sort of fallen off the wagon approaching her 40th birthday with the stress of Ruth being unwell, and she's sort of gone back to heroin, and in doing so has become so like very self-involved, just almost like escapism, is trying to change the past to make the present better. Let's say even the time travel stuff is all in her head, right? It's all part of her experience on drugs.
Yeah.
The bit that still confuses me, that's fine, I guess, to a point. The bit that confuses me is the bit where Nadia and Alan have to pay him to get to the point, sort of get back to the present, right? That I don't mind. The idea that Nadia has to pay a price. Why is Alan paying a price? Is Alan using heroin as well? That's where I got confused.
Yeah.
The metaphor broke down for me.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like I could connect, if I put my brain to it, I could connect dots in season one because I feel like they were there to connect. And this time I feel like you're making me work too hard, and sometimes I think perhaps you're making me do the work for you, which I don't appreciate as a viewer in terms of like putting it all together and giving it a deeper meaning.
All right, let's move on from Nadia. Quickly, Alan's story. Do you have any particular thoughts about this? It kind of summed up to me like Alan's biggest problem was him being a perfectionist in season one, right? He was kind of like he needed to be in control, and then his and maybe I'm oversimplifying this, but we didn't get enough time for it to mean much else. He just had to come to grips with not being able to be in control. It's like, yeah, sometimes you can't change things. Sometimes you don't know what happened to that person. Maybe they did die. Maybe they made it to the other side of the Berlin Wall. It's okay.
It was cool. Exactly. Yeah, you said it perfectly. Cool. My thought was like, okay, so that's happening to him as well. So if time plays with or gives access to certain people to experience these things for a reason, and we know that it gives Nadia and Alan these kind of missions or circumstances to experience simultaneously, there is purpose for that, for them to be joined in that way. I have no fucking idea why Alan's experience of the past is tied to hers. It felt so disjointed to me. And it might be like, you know, a cool episode of Doctor Who about this guy who experiences that. I've got no idea why it's in Russian Doll. It feels so other than, it feels so like afterthought. It didn't connect in a way that was effective for me at all.
Season one in particular made it seem like, or my understanding was, that what was happening to them was directly because they need to connect to each other.
Yes.
Right? That was the whole point. That's why this timey-wimey Groundhog Day situation was happening.
Yeah.
So, as you said, this time around, when Alan's experiencing his own thing that does not tie back to Nora in any way, you kind of like, oh, okay. Do these guys they're just now sensitive to time?
It feels like it ends abruptly. It begins abruptly, ends abruptly. It's like, what the fuck? Yeah, it's such a weird side note in this season.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
Do you have any side notes for me, Damask?
I don't. I watched it as soon as it came out. I kind of smashed through it and I just watched it to watch it, and I didn't take any notes, so I apologize.
I've only got a couple. Just a line I liked. Well, that's a lovely story, and I'm sorry about all that polio. It was a great little line when Nadia was talking to Chez's when he was older or whatever.
Recently watched one of those cute, I don't know, YouTube Vanity Fair interviews with Natasha Lyonne, and people were doing impressions of her. And she's like, and they were all doing like kind of rhymey things. And she's like, yeah, no, like rhyming's cool, but really like my sense of humor is just taking like random words and smashing them together and making a sentence. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's so much of the script of Nadia. Like it's just absolute absurd statements that, I don't know, for whatever reason make me giggle.
It's worth saying if you're have a bit of an itch for Natasha Lyonne at the moment as well, it's Sunday night here now. She was just on the season finale of Saturday Night Live she was hosting. So that would be worth chasing up.
Also, have you watched episode 2 of Drag Race All-Stars?
I found out today that Jinx Monsoon did Natasha Lyonne on Snatch Game, and that made me want it. We started watching it tonight. I'm like, I got to watch it now.
Yeah.
When Jinx is doing Natasha Lyonne, is it good? Is she good?
Well, they do a double. So every participant has to do a double Snatch Game. So they have to play two characters. So she does Natasha Lyonne. But I also don't think they give enough air to her, Natasha Lyonne. Damn. But what she does is great. But she also does Judy Garland, which is phenomenal.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's.
Surely
definitely
people have done Judy Garland before on. They
not
must
like
have.
Jinx Monsoon. Great. Not like Jinx Monsoon.
Oh, that's exciting. I already mentioned the trio from season one, showing up the apartment and then the finale. The only other thing I was thinking about, they talk about Columbo a little bit in this season.
Yeah.
Columbo gets brought up. They talk about from the perspective that like that Steven Spielberg directed like the pilot or something of Columbo, which I didn't know. But was like, was that a deliberate Easter egg? Because there was a period of time after Russian Doll where everyone's like, they should do a Columbo reboot and have Natasha Lyonne be Columbo, which hasn't happened. What's his name? The director of The Last Jedi, Rian Johnson, is doing a detective TV show with Natasha Lyonne, which is coming up later this year, apparently.
Cool. That's exciting. I didn't know that.
So I was like, I think it's an Easter egg and a fun little nod. Highlights and lowlights. What was your low light of this season?
I think it was Alan's story low light.
That's the obvious answer, and certainly I'm going to say the same thing. I also want to say I did not love the stuff with Nadia and Maxine in Budapest. Which surprised me because Maxine was a highlight of mine in season one.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not enjoy her. It's particularly an episode they dedicated to Nadia and Maxine being together and traveling and at a party and doing drugs and stuff. I found her not compelling or fun or anything.
The
I thought
wanting
that
to have
sucked.
Like a baby with like a Nazi and stuff and like the leaning into her stupidity wasn't great.
No.
I feel that.
What was your highlight?
Oh, my highlight. Can you go first?
I'll say I think the highlight for me was episode 3 and the sequence, particularly where the sequence is building up to it even, where Nadia starts to really experience her mother's mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when it all sort of hits her in the psych ward. But even the build up to that, there was just this. And I talked about, I was worried that like that there's a frantic energy this season, but in that episode, it was deliberately off-putting and very strange, and it made me feel very uneasy in all the right ways. I thought it was really, 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 really well done, and I was extremely high on the show at episode 3 because of that.
I'm really struggling to think of a moment that stands out to me as a highlight, which I think is probably telling of the season. I mean, because I can't think of a moment, I just remember like, you know, random asides of Nadia's, which is pure Natasha Lyonne. So I'll always enjoy her performance. Totally. I guess that's got to be the highlight for me, but not necessarily a moment within the show.
I think that's worth saying. Like Natasha Lyonne, even if we didn't find this season as fulfilling or compelling as season one, fulfilling particularly as season one, it was still a joy spending time with the character of Nadia.
Always,
Natasha Lyonne was excellent. Absolutely. Yeah. Do you have any predictions, hopes, or concerns going into season 3?
Yeah. I guess my prediction is with how we left this season.
Yep.
The weight of, I think the moment where she kind of comes back for Ruth's wake, for me, that is the moment before the realization, the weight of the emotions behind really not being there for someone mm-hmm. and feeling alone. So my prediction for season three is the weight of that actually hitting, and then we're going to have some kind of character growth because of that. Okay. That would be my prediction and my hope, I think.
I like that hope in particular. I am predicting what season three is going to be. Mm-hmm. I think season one is very much about the present. Nadia mm-hmm. can't escape the moment, that moment around mm-hmm. her 36th birthday. Mm-hmm. It's on repeat over and over and over and over and over and over again. Season two is about reconciling with the past yep. at the expense of the present, right?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
My guess is if season three happens, and I would guess it would be the final season as well. That was even suggested if there was going to be more of it. They had initially pitched this as three seasons, would be about the future. My guess is it will kind of be the opposite of what this season was, where the Nadia and Alan are able to travel into the future. They come back. They do something once they've got knowledge from the future that changes the future. Mm-hmm. And then it's all about trying to like whatever future they saw that they liked or didn't like. It's like every time they try and make a change, the future gets worse and worse and worse. And mm-hmm. ultimately, the lesson is, because the lesson always seems to be about living in the present and living in the moment, is like the future isn't written. Just don't worry about what's coming up. Just live in the now and enjoy the now and the people around you that love you, etc.
Good
That's
prediction.
My guess. Yeah. However, with Netflix at the moment, I'd be surprised if we even get a season three. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Hunting Seasons. You can find more of what we do via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick. It's actually Sean's birthday today. Happy birthday, Sean, aka at Shawnee Boy Draws. Our theme song and bumpers from Lucas Heil of Birthday Loyalty Club. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can also find myself, Broderick Gordis, on Twitter at BGordes, BGordes. Damask, you're still off Twitter?
I'm off all of that stuff, but if you want to contact me, just do it through the Hunting Seasons Twitter or email.
Cool. Next episode, which should be a couple of weeks away, we'll be back to discuss Atlanta Season 3. I haven't watched a single episode of that yet, but we love the first two seasons, and I'm hearing very good things about Season 3, at least when it's first started airing again. So looking forward to that. In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye.
Good night, everybody. Absolutely.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.